The next matter on the calendar this morning is the case of State of Minnesota versus Anthony James Harrell. Counsel, when you reach the podium, please identify yourselves for us and take whatever time you need to adjust the height of the podium to your comfort level. Thank you. Counsel for appellant may proceed.
Ryan Young on behalf of the appellant. May it please the court, on March 8th, 2018, a Minneapolis SWAT team busted into a home in North Minneapolis. They were looking for Dustin Barth, but Dustin Barth wasn't there. He was already incarcerated in Leavenworth Penitentiary. It is undisputed in this case that the investigating officer accessed information on a database telling him Dustin Barth was incarcerated at Leavenworth Prison. That crucial information, however, was excluded from the officer's search warrant application.
Counsel, I'm going to stop you because I think there's a lot to cover in this case, in my view, and I think the facts are relatively undisputed. Everybody agrees that there were misrepresentations in the search warrant. Those misrepresentations related to the informant's identification of the suspect as Dustin Barth. And to me, the first issue, as the parties have framed it in their brief, seems to be, well, what information should be extracted or omitted from the search warrant application? And because it's a misrepresentation, and once we do that, is the remaining information sufficient to show probable cause for the warrant? Do you agree that that's the lay of the land?
Yes, so I agree that that's the issue. I would say additionally, one of the issues is also it's probable cause in the first instance, and then also this is a no-knock warrant.
We'll get to that. Let's focus on the probable cause aspect first, because those are two different standards, correct? Whether or not there's probable cause for a search warrant is one issue, and the second issue is whether there's reasonable articulable suspicion to justify a no-knock warrant.
Correct.
Let's focus on the probable cause. What aspects or statements within the application do you think need to be stricken as misrepresentations?
So in appellant's reply brief, we've identified the specific portions that need to be stricken.
Okay.
Our position is that references to Dustin Barth, specifically all of the references related to Dustin Barth, need to be stricken. And so what would remain in the search warrant is essentially information related to the controlled buy.
I'm looking at this application, and as I understand the facts, and you tell me if this is not how it happened, the informant goes to the police. The informant says there is a person in this particular apartment who is in possession of and selling high potency marijuana. That person has a firearm. That person uses the firearm to protect or effectuate the drug transaction. In other words, the gun is tied to the drugs. With that information, the police set up a controlled buy, so the informant goes to the apartment under the supervision of the police, purchases marijuana. And only at that point do the police show the informant a picture of Dustin Barth and say, is this the guy that's in the apartment selling the drugs? And the informant says yes. Is that
accurate?
Well,
so from appellant's position, that would be incorrect under the Franks analysis. So from appellant's position...
No. I'm asking about the facts of this case. My understanding of the facts are that this informant never said to the police, Dustin Barth is in this apartment possessing and selling drugs. Dustin Barth has a gun. Dustin Barth just sold me these drugs in the controlled purchase. Mm-hmm. My understanding is the informant told the police that a male at this apartment was doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And then the police showed him a picture, and the informant said, that's the guy.
So the affidavit that the officer submitted to the district court in order to get this search warrant granted said in one of the first sentences that we say needs to be stricken, mm-hmm. He said, the cooperating defendant came to me and told me Dustin Barth is selling drugs out of this home. It's specifically related to Dustin Barth. And actually, the district court in their order actually specifically said that that was one of the phrases that the district court was concerned with, and actually said that in phrasing it that way, in introducing things in the way that the cooperating defendant had actually identified an individual I mean, that bolsters.
Well, I agree with you 100%. We're saying the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
The misrepresentation exists because we all agree that the informant never told the police this was Dustin Barth. The informant told the police about a suspect and that suspect's activities. The police came up with a theory that that suspect is Dustin Barth, showed the informant a picture, and the informant said, yep, that's the guy. So they were saying the same thing. That is the misrepresentation. The police wrote this application as if the informant was naming Dustin Barth from the get-go, when in fact the informant only provided, I don't even know if the informant provided the name Dustin Barth. What the informant did is said, yes, that's him, when shown a picture of Dustin Barth.
That's correct.
So that's my point.
Mm-hmm.
So the informant provided a whole lot of information without saying this information regards Dustin Barth. The police came up with a theory that it was Dustin Barth, had the informant confirm that, and then presented its case in the warrant in a way that suggested that the informant had always said it was Dustin Barth.
Exactly.
Okay.
And
if that's what happened, why wouldn't we just take out any information in the warrant that says the person in the apartment is Dustin Barth and leave the description of the activities of that person in the apartment? Why do we have to ignore the information the informant provided regarding the activities of that person in that apartment, which include possession and sale of drugs, possession of a firearm, and use of the firearm in the sale of drugs, and simply take out anything in the application that says the name of that person is Dustin Barth and Dustin Barth has a criminal record?
Well, so are you speaking in terms of just replacing Dustin Barth as the state has proposed with something like
because
resident?
The misrepresentation, as I understand it, is that the police told the magistrate that the informant said it's Dustin Barth who's doing all this. Okay, well, take out that it's Dustin Barth. We're still left with the informant telling the police that there's somebody in this apartment doing these things which are criminal.
Well, I mean, I think the issue we have here is, ultimately, we don't know what the informant told the officer. I think one of the issues is...
it says this investigation began after your affiant received information from a cooperating defendant who indicated that Barth was possessing and distributing large quantities of high-grade marijuana at 2805 Oliver Avenue North. The CD further indicated that Barth has been observed in possession of a handgun. Why don't we just take out the reference to Barth in those sentences?
Well, because under Franks, I mean, the representation, which is a misrepresentation that the officer was making to the district court related to all these issues.
Right, but the misrepresentation was that the informant says that the person who's doing all this is Barth. That's the misrepresentation. There's no allegation that the misrepresentation related to the informant's statements regarding what was going on in that apartment. The misrepresentation seems to only relate to the assertion that the informant identified Barth as the person who was doing it. See the difference? And we don't have to stay on this topic, but I'm having a hard time getting off that point, so I want you to have an opportunity to get me off it. But I'm not seeing, in sum, why I have to ignore the informant's information about the activities in that apartment misidentified the person who was doing those activities.
Well, I think that the reason that you need to do that is because, you know, under Franks, what we're looking at here is the four corners of the search warrant, correct? And so all of this kind of information that you're referring to is largely coming from the state afterwards in the Franks hearing testifying to these points.
Well, we do have in the affidavit that the resident, quote-unquote resident, Dustin Lee Barth, why don't we just take out Dustin Lee Barth and go with resident? That's a word that's in the search warrant, and that seems like a pretty reasonable way to describe somebody who's in the apartment doing things.
Well, I think what's the reason it's not reasonable here is because the entire representation that the court was making to the the magistrate judge. I mean, you need to go back and, you know, put yourself in the shoes of the magistrate judge and what was being represented to the magistrate when they made this decision. Everything that was being represented was, this is an investigation of Dustin Barth, and, you know, this is important that we get a no-knock entry, that we get a search warrant of the residence because of who Dustin Barth is, because of his previous, you know, drug convictions, because of his prior, you know, felon in possession of a firearm.
Let me ask this. In terms of the no-knock warrant, just substantively, I agree that one thing that should come out of this warrant is that Dustin Barth has this criminal history, because that relates solely to Dustin Barth and not to more generally what's going on in the apartment. But there is a statement in the no-knock portion of the warrant that says, you know, the person who's in the apartment selling drugs uses the gun to carry out the drug sales. That information could more generally relate to the person who's doing these activities as opposed to specifically Dustin Barth, his criminal history. If that information is that information enough to establish a reasonable suspicion to believe that there is a risk of harm to the police that justifies a no-knock warrant?
Well, I don't think so, because, so here kind of the issue we have is that this police officer, you know, based on his search of the database, was, we would say, recklessly disregarding information that was available to him, telling him that this individual who he's representing to the magistrate, he's going to be, you know, searching their residence. He knew this individual was in prison. And so I guess the issue I have saying that, you know, is that enough to satisfy probable cause or a no-knock, is that once you remove those statements and then provide that information that the officer had at his disposal, that Dustin Barth was actually, you know, incarcerated in Leavenworth Prison, and that the cooperating defendant had identified Dustin Barth as the person he purchased marijuana from, I think a magistrate would look at that and would say, you need to do a little bit more work here. I'm not going to give you a no-knock on this based solely on, you know, a cooperating defendant saying that he's seen someone around with a gun and you don't even know what his criminal history is.
The cooperating defendant made a controlled buy and told the police he's got a gun and he uses the gun to protect his drugs. Isn't that enough under the case law? This isn't, you know, boilerplate language or there's guns in the house or there's drugs in the house. This is someone telling the police uses his gun in connection with his drug activity. Isn't that the particularity that we need?
I mean, I would say in these circumstances, it's not. When he's misidentifying the individual, when he doesn't know the individual's name, when there's no criminal background provided for the individual whatsoever, I mean, we don't know if he's legally possessing a firearm. To the extent that the guy just vaguely states that he has a firearm that's, you know, used in connection with drug sales, no, I don't think that's sufficient.
Can I ask you a question? And it's something I'm going to ask the state, and you'll have more time on rebuttal. It's my understanding that this case was resolved under 2601 subdivision 4, which is a stipulation of the prosecution's case to obtain review of a pretrial ruling. And it's my understanding that the defense below raised two issues, whether there was probable cause for the warrant once misrepresentations were removed from the application, and whether the standard for granting a no-knock was met. It's also my understanding that the district court specifically ruled on the probable cause issue, but did not in any way, shape, or form seem to address the no-knock issue in its ruling in district court. So I am questioning whether that issue is properly before this court, given the procedural context. And that is because under 2601 sub 4, when the parties agree that the district court's ruling on a specified pretrial issue is dispositive of the case, or that the ruling makes a contested trial unnecessary, following procedure must be used to preserve the issue for appellate review. The question I have is this no-knock issue preserved for appellate review under the plain language of that rule when we don't have a ruling on the issue in the first place?
So my answer to that question would be that, yes, it is preserved, and that you can answer that question here on appeal. I mean, I think so the district court just kind of, you know, it just didn't address the issue. The state and appellant agree on that. The issue, however, is it's a constitutional question that is reviewed de novo, and
But we have case law that says from the Minnesota Supreme Court that we do not decide issues that were not raised and addressed below, even constitutional issues related to suppression. And here we have a specific rule that sets forth a specific procedure that allows a defendant to essentially have what would otherwise be a conditional guilty plea, which aren't allowed. And we have case law saying that this rule must be strictly complied with. And I'm a little concerned that we're being asked to ignore the plain language of the rule and to allow defendant to have appellate review of an issue that was raised but not ruled upon by the district court.
Yeah, I mean, my answer again would be that I see my time is up too. If I can
go ahead,
I mean, my answer again would be that this is a purely legal issue that I think was preserved through briefing.
I've read the district court record. I agree, it was raised, it was argued, but it's not ruled upon.
Yeah, correct. And so again, I'd say that because it's a constitutional question, and you know, there's.
You think the record is adequate because it really does come down to the four corners of the application again, correct?
Exactly.
Okay.
All right, you'll have a chance for rebuttal.
May it please the court, counsel, John Schmidt, Assistant Hennepin County Attorney on behalf of the state of Minnesota. This appeal really boils down to whether in sanitizing the warrant, whether the district court was required to ignore the fact that there was a resident inside that house who was both selling drugs and possessing guns, especially after the district court was made aware of the fact that in the misrepresentation in the affidavit came from the police officer, not the informant. The district court then properly sanitized the warrant to delete information about the misrepresentation, but leave in the information about the tip and about the resident in the house who was selling the drugs, possessing the guns.
As a result, we asked puzzled about the references in the application concerning possession of a handgun. On page 2, it says the CD further indicated that Barth, we know that's wrong, has been observed in possession of a handgun. Goes on to say that Barth is prohibited from possessing firearms and ammunition, blah, 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 blah. Then on the next page, again, let's see, the 1, 2, 3, 4th paragraph, it says, Dustin Lee Barth has been observed in possession of a firearm. We know that's not true, but all it says is he's observed in possession of a firearm. Then if you go to the next page, then we get into what I would say is boilerplate, because it says the affiant knows from experience that they use cellular phones, so I want those. The affiant knows from experience they use digital cameras, so I want those. The affiant knows from experience, blah, 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 blah. We're into what is known from experience. And then at the very end on page 5, it says Barth is in possession of a firearm, the cooperator further went on to indicate that Barth utilizes this firearm in the protection of his controlled substance sales, but doesn't say how. It seems like that's just a generic reference to a person having a firearm in their own home. The same could be said of me. The same could be said of at least one of my colleagues, maybe two. That doesn't say anything if you're not a felon and are ineligible to possess.
It does say, and I would hope that this applies to all your colleagues, that he was possessing the gun. That does not apply to your colleagues.
Thank
He's possessing the gun in order to protect his controlled substances.
But it doesn't say how.
It doesn't say how.
It says in the earlier non-boilerplate is Barth is in possession of a firearm and he's a felon. Barth is in possession of a firearm and he's a felon. Then we get to the end to the boilerplate and says blah, blah, blah. But it doesn't say how.
Right.
Utilizes this firearm as a means of protection for his controlled substance sales.
So it says he's the resident, and I agree, the information about Barth needs to be removed. The information about Barth's criminal history needs to be removed. And I try to lay that out in the brief. But the information about the resident possessing a gun and using that gun to protect, using that gun to protect his controlled substances sales. We know from the four corners of the affidavit that a controlled buy occurred. that they gave drugs. He went in, the informant went in, bought drugs, came back, gave it to the officer. We know, so it minor details of an informant's tip can provide veracity for the rest of it. And this was more than a minor detail. This was an informant who was searched ahead of time, went in, bought the drugs, came out. So we know that there are controlled substances sales.
I think that part, there obvious, it seems to me there's no doubt of that, that somebody in the residence sold drugs to this confidential informant.
Correct. And using that with the tip of what the informant had said in the first place was there are drug sales occurring at this specific address. In that specific address, there is a person who is selling those drugs and is possessing a gun in order to protect the sales, utilizing the gun in possession of a firearm.
That seems more like a conclusion than a fact.
That, well, I mean, that comes from the informant's tip, is that it is a person in there who's possessing a gun.
If it hadn't have been Barth, I'm sort of jumping to the night, to the no-knock portion.
Sure.
If it hadn't have been Barth, which it wasn't, do you think that the no-knock would have been authorized on these slim facts?
Yes, because it's reasonable articulable suspicion, which is a low bar in order to get the no-knock warrant, where you need something more than an unarticulated hunch. And the something more that exists here is the tip of the informant that says there are drug sales going on in this house and there's a person possessing a gun who's using that gun to protect their sales, which was then corroborated by the sale of the drug, which that alone gets you probable cause to search the residence. Then the no-knock goes, I'm sorry, Judge.
Yes. Oh, no, well, I don't want to interrupt that.
Go ahead.
But here's a concern I have. The officer obtains a photograph of Barth, shows the confidential informant, is this the guy? And he says, yes. It's not the guy, though.
It's not the guy.
So how reliable is the informant? I mean, he doesn't even come back to the officer after the controlled buy and said, hey, that photo you showed me, that's not the guy.
Right, but that was immediately after a controlled buy where there are drugs in the car. And if you look at the picture that was shown, which was of Barth,
it's is it a colored?
Person, it is in color.
The guy has red hair.
The guy has very closely shaved hair, Mr. Barth does, so it's hard to tell. And I don't know whether this is in the record or not, but it's certainly in the transcript that the tip was a person with red hair, and it was a white male.
And it's not clear from the warrant, but my understanding from both the briefs, everybody seems to agree that that photo show up happened after the controlled buy, not before.
That's correct. And Judge Larkin,
your
recitation of the facts were correct in terms of what had happened in here.
So sort of at the very end of the information gathering, the police say, is this him?
Correct. And the informant says, yes. But looking at the photo, it's somebody with closely shaved hair. It is a white male. And the closely shaved hair looks like that could be reddish hair. So in looking at that, I don't think the informant's identification of that person was so far off to throw out the entire credibility, especially because of the closely shaved hair compared to the defendant that he just did a controlled buy from, who had longer hair and a bit of a beard.
Although, so, on that point, the application does say that the informant positively identified that person as Barth.
The informant said, was this the person that you just bought from? And he said, yes. So that would be a positive identification of the officer interjecting Barth into that.
Right, but the representation wasn't, that picture looks kind of like the guy I bought the drugs from. The representation is, it's a positive identification.
Correct, which is the misinformation that needs to be removed from the warrant after the Franks analysis.
And when you remove that as having been wrong, you're back to Judge Shellhouse's question. Doesn't that undercut what else the informant is saying?
Not after the controlled buy, when they hand the drugs over to the police immediately after being in the resident that the informant identified where drugs are being sold of high-quality marijuana, and the informant then turns over high-quality marijuana purchased from a white male with reddish hair.
But does it undercut
those facts?
The
can be independently identified because of the police operation, right? There was a controlled buy. We can be independently sure that that little bit of fact is true.
Correct.
But when it comes to identification, whether the person had a gun, what the person was or wasn't doing with the gun, there we don't have any independent corroboration.
But they wouldn't be at that house without the tip. And so the controlled buy only came about because of the informant's tip that at this specific residence, there is a person selling high-quality drugs, high-quality marijuana, and in possession of a gun in order to protect that.
But I think the point is you need to show that an informant is reliable.
Correct.
The fact that there was a controlled buy kind of has to satisfy everybody that drugs were being sold out of the apartment. But everything else regarding the gun and what the gun was used for, that is corroborated. It's not corroborated, and it's provided by somebody who misidentified the suspect. So does that information, therefore, not justify the no-knock?
No, because there's still reasonable articular suspicion for that. In sanitizing the affidavit, the district court, and part of the Franks hearing, is to figure out how did this misrepresentation come about? What are the exact misrepresentations that exist in order that need to be sanitized from this affidavit? And whether it was reckless. The court didn't make a finding on the reckless.
I don't know that we need to talk about reckless, do we?
No, we don't. There are certainly misrepresentations in here, and the investigation should have been done better.
What about the issue of not preserving the no-knock issue for appeal? I see that the state says we must address it. Why must we address this when we have a rule that plainly says when you use this procedure, our review is limited to the specific ruling?
Correct, and that's something that honestly I missed when I was briefing that in terms of the rule. So you certainly don't have to address it. I would definitely concede, and as I said in the brief, this was argued, this was raised. At best, I would say that maybe a remand would be appropriate in order for the district court to address this specific issue, because
well,
the defendant.
Why would we remand it? I mean, it's de novo. The record's adequate.
Well, and that's the point, and that's why I just addressed it on the merits. The district court didn't address this.
Which raises the question, you know, in my mind, for practitioners, if you're going to take advantage of this proceeding, you should know how it works, and you should read the rule. And you should make sure the issue you're trying to preserve for appellate review was the subject of a ruling. And if it wasn't, you should probably raise that with the district court judge and ask her to rule on the issue so you can comply with the rule.
That's right. I mean, it should have been before they went through the procedure to do the stipulated fact. They should have looked and figured out in this order, you didn't actually rule on the no-knock. Judge, could you please give us a ruling on that so we can go forward with?
Because I think waiver of rights form simply says what's the pretrial issue, something like bad warrant.
Right. There wasn't much there in terms of that. And bad warrant, you're looking at really most times you're looking at the probable cause, but it was the reason.
Well, bad warrant kind of gives you a theme. Then sure. What the rule tells us to do is say, what was the ruling? That's what we're going to review.
Right. And the ruling does not include the no-knock. And so arguably that is not before the court, although I do think the record is sufficient and it was raised. And really, that goes to both parties. That's something that both parties should have talked about and figured out and said, you know, hey, you have all this stuff here. Did you want it? And I guess for the state's perspective, the trial attorney may not have, maybe you don't want to appeal that issue. Maybe that's something that you think that is a low bar and you just want to talk about what was sanitized and focus on probable cause. That's entirely possible. One point I would like to make in terms of, in the reply brief, the appellant does cite State versus Amundson, which for the proposition that a firearm alone is not sufficient in order to justify a no-knock entry. Amundson doesn't quite say what the appellant is saying it says. In that case, there was information in the warrant that was removed because it was obtained illegally. And the information from that warrant that was removed was when the police, without a warrant, went into the house and discovered guns. Without the information of the guns, they said that, and without that information regarding the presence of the firearm, the search warrant application has no particularized showing of dangerousness. This case is different in the fact that there is a particularized showing of dangerousness in the fact that there is a resident in the house who's using guns to protect his controlled substance sales.
How is that particularized showing made in this affidavit?
In this affidavit, and again, this is something that I noted in the brief, when you first look at the first time that Barth was used in there, it's set up as resident. It says, your affiant and assisting investigator
Sergeant Jeff Carter are conducting a criminal inquiry involving the address 2805 Oliver Avenue North and the resident, Dustin Lee Barth, date of birth hereinafter Barth. It starts off as "and the resident," and then it goes into what the police interjected in this investigation, that this resident is this person, which was not the tip that the officer received. And that is the misrepresentation, and anything about Barth needs to be removed. In terms of resident, that is still something that should remain. And the argument that I've made in the brief and taking out DB throughout, you have this hole there that can be replaced by resident since the language is here and after Barth. So you replace it with resident, then you have that there is a person possessing guns, protecting the drug sales that we know are happening based on the controlled buy. Unless there are any other questions.
Just to confirm for the record, so the state's position is that in these sort of unique circumstances, this court should reach the issue of the no-knock warrant, given the record before us?
Given, yes, I would say in the interest of justice, it's appropriate to address.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Rebuttal.
Thank you. You know, one thing I'd like to address just immediately is the state makes a reference, you know, repeatedly to the, you know, issue of whether or not the facts justify a no-knock entry is a low bar and the cops don't need to show much of anything to get it. That's not the law in the state of Minnesota. I point the court specifically to well, State v. Schaefer, but also State v. Anault and State v. Martinez both indicate that the state is required to, or the police officers, you know, who are seeking to have a no-knock warrant issued, need to demonstrate a strong showing of particularized circumstances that justify that. And the only two bases on which you can obtain a no-knock are dangerousness, or showing that it's, you know, likely that evidence would be destroyed.
Well, no question about the fact that guns are dangerous.
So that's correct. There's no question that guns are dangerous. And, you know, there's not a rule in Minnesota, a per se rule that, you know, to the extent you just put in boilerplate information saying that firearms are present, you've satisfied the particularized circumstances. Generally, what's used is, you know, criminal history related to a firearm. So an example would be this person we know possesses a firearm and he's a felon and he can't possess a firearm, or he has a dangerous history. And so he presents a danger to police. What we have here is literally a number of accusations that the, you know, the resident or Dustin Barth is has a firearm. And then we have a, you know, single sentence saying that a cooperating defendant who is, you know, has proven unreliable based on his identification after the controlled buy, just a vague statement saying that he uses it to protect his drug sales. I'd assert that that's not a particularized showing of dangerousness to officers in this situation based on, you know, the cooperating defendant's unreliability. And also just the vagueness of the statement. I mean, this is an individual who actually conducted a controlled buy at the residence, and he doesn't say anything about did he see the firearm? Was the firearm there when he conducted the controlled buy? What are the details surrounding any of this? It's largely just stating that repeatedly that the owner has a firearm. And so what I would assert is that once, you know, this search warrant has been sanitized under Franks, what we're left with here is a controlled buy and a vague assertion that the resident or the suspect has a firearm.
Is a controlled buy enough for probable cause, separate from the no-knock?
Enough on probable cause?
Right.
Are
you really suggesting that if there's a search warrant affidavit that said we conducted a controlled buy at this residence on this date, purchased marijuana, are you saying that's not enough for probable cause for a search warrant?
No. So that's not what appellant's saying. We're not saying
You're just saying, okay, maybe that's enough for a search warrant, but the rest of what's here is not enough for a no-knock.
Well, so what I'll say is we're not saying that there's, you know, under, you know, any circumstances where there's a controlled buy, that would not satisfy probable cause. What we're saying is, had the magistrate had all of the information before her related to the issues of this misidentification of Dustin Barth.
Why would that impact the fact that there was a controlled buy?
Yeah, I think Judge Larkin's asking, and I have that question too. What if there's a controlled buy and the affidavit said, we have no idea in the world who this is, but they're at that address, and we sent a person in, marked, searched them to make sure they had no money, and they came back out, the money was gone, and they had the drugs that weren't on them before. And we have no idea who sold it to them. Couldn't you get a search warrant?
Based solely on a controlled buy, not identifying?
Right. There's drugs being sold in that house, and we know it because we did a controlled buy.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, one of the issues there is, you know, there's the, you know, there was evidence entered into the record at the district court level through testimony that you'll see related to the PD's investigator raising an issue about whether or not the cooperating defendant was watched as he, you know, entered the home in order to conduct the controlled buy, and whether or not the officers were, you know, paying close attention to him. And there's also, you know, evidence in the record that the cooperating defendant was
beyond the four corners of the search warrant.
And no controlled buy is perfect. I mean, there's always some period of time they have to walk through a hallway sometimes to get to the apartment or what have you, or walk through an entryway to get to the house. But if you just had a controlled buy, we gave him the money and we searched him for drugs. We saw him go into the house. He came back out. He had drugs on him, and he didn't have the money. Can't you get a search warrant?
I'd say, you know, under a lot of circumstances, when you conduct a controlled buy, you can get a search warrant. I would say under these circumstances, with the district court record, and had all of this information been before the magistrate would have asked the state to do more work.
Thank you. The matter has been well argued, and it is taken under advisement.